Hi, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra's podcast. This is Margot Stedman. I'm the Education and Community Engagement Director here at the Rockford Symphony, and I'm joined once again by Steve Larson to tell us more about the organ and our upcoming concert.
I'm always amazed at how much people know about organs and don't know about organs. Everybody's familiar with what an organ sounds like, and everybody's heard the church organ. Even if you don't regularly go to church, you've heard the church organ play. You've heard the wedding march played an organ. You've heard the recessional, the Mendelssohn wedding march played, and Here Comes the Bride, and everything else. Maybe the Toccata and Fugue in D minor, and Phantom of the Opera, things like that. But when it comes down to really knowing what the instrument is about, it's really a mystery to most people. Let's start with just a little bit of familiarity, just maybe the common parlance that comes from the organ. We all are familiar with the phrase, pulling all the stops out.
Yes.
And meaning to really to let everything fly and to put full force, full energy, full effort into it. That's an organ term. And it refers to literally pulling all the stops out, those little buttons that protrude from an organ console. Each one of those controls, well, basically a set of pipes. And each time you add a pipe, the organ gets a set of pipes. It gets a little bit louder and louder and louder until finally, when you've pulled out all the stops, you have all the pipes working at the same time, and the organ makes an enormous sound. One of the reasons that I think organs are not better known to people is that, well, they're not very portable. At least they haven't been up until fairly recently in history. And the ones that have been portable really haven't been all that good.
Not powerful enough.
Not powerful, and didn't really sound very good. Back when I was going to school, the organists, the organ majors, referred to electronic organs as toasters or appliances. They were very dismissive. And for the most part, they really sounded pretty bad. But in a lot of churches, though, that's the best they can do, because pipe organs are very, very, very expensive.
Lots of pieces there.
Yeah.
To build and maintain.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about what makes an organ, what goes into an organ. First of all, what people should know is that every pipe organ in the world is unique. It is like no other organ anywhere. It was designed and built exactly for the spot it's installed in. There is no other instrument that is identical to it anywhere in the world. That's really wonderful, because you look at all the violins that have been made, and of course there are Stradivarius and Guarneris and good violins and bad violins, and they all sound like violins, though. They're all identifiable as a violin. An organ between one church, one building, and another can sound completely different. Still probably identifiable as an organ, but obviously not the same instrument. So let's just talk a little bit about how an organ is put together. An organ is, first of all, you start out with a keyboard, standard keyboard. A piano keyboard, as most people know, is 88 keys. An organ keyboard isn't that big. An organ keyboard is as big as harpsichord keyboards are and were. 61 keys from C up to C, 5 octaves. And also with a set of pedals. 22, I think, is the number of pedals, a standard AGA pedal board. And the pedals are like a keyboard for the feet. And, of course, they are primarily for the bass notes, for the low notes. So you can play with two hands and you can play with your feet. And you can have a lot of different voices going at the same time.
Which is a whole different level of coordination than just playing a piano.
Yeah, but that's the thing that people don't realize, though, is that you don't start out playing the organ. Anybody who says, I want to be an organist, is my dream since I've been 2 years old and I'm now 5. I really wanted to play the organ more than anything else. Any organ teacher would say, fine, first go learn the piano. So each one of those keys, the standard white keys, black keys that we see in the piano, and each one of those pedals is connected to minimally to one pipe. And that pipe plays that particular pitch. That in itself would be pretty boring because it would only have one sound. Mm-hmm. So what people have done since they started making organs, and organs are a very old instrument, you start adding other sets of pipes, other types of pipes. that produce different sounds, or maybe produce a different octave. The standard organ pipe is what we call the 8-foot pipe. And that's because an 8-foot long pipe with a flue stop, kind of like a flute, or like, more like a recorder actually, blowing across a recorder. You have that little open hole in the recorder. You blow air over that and it produces a sound. A pipe 8 feet long produces more or less the low C.
Okay.
And that's where things are built. Now, if you take a pipe, you cut that pipe in half, a 4-foot pipe, that produces a sound an octave higher.
A lot of physics going into this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's definitely, there's a lot of physics here. Cut that in half again, 2 foot, you get another octave higher. So you get registers of pipes that are called 8-foot registers and 4-foot registers and 2-foot registers. And, of course, going the other direction, 16-foot or 32-foot.
Wow.
And even in some of the really, really biggest organs, 64-foot. Now, does this mean that there is a 64-foot long pipe in that organ? Well, yes and no. There is one acoustical trick organ builders have used for a long time, is that if you take a bass pipe and you put a cap on it, put a lid over the top, it sounds an octave lower.
Ah.
So you can have a 32-foot pipe by having a 16-foot pipe and just putting a lid on it. And it sounds a 32-foot pitch, that real low, rumbly pitch. Now, you go to the Mormon Cultural Center, not the Tabernacle, the big meeting building in Salt Lake City. There you can actually see 64-foot pipes because that's a huge, huge room, and there are pipes that are that tall in that room. But so you've got this, now you've got the each rank of pipes, it's called, gets added on and produces higher sounds and lower sounds, and then you can get different sounds out of pipes by changing their construction. Rather than have a tube with that little recorder-like slit in the bottom for the flue pipe, you can have reed pipes. You can have a buzzing reed in there, or you can have box pipes that are made out of wood, and they're basically kind of a rectangular shape. All these different pipes, different shapes, produce different sounds, and each one of these is called a rank. The major method that organists use to measure organs or compare organs is to say that that is a 32-rank Casavant. Casavant is the builder of the organ. 32 ranks means there are 32 sets of pipes in there, not counting other couplers and things like that. The little more technical than we need to get into here.
So but, we have different, let's summarize, we have different ranks of pipes mm-hmm. that produce sounds in different registers on the organ.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the keyboard and there's the keyboard for the feet.
Right.
So that they can get a whole range of sounds.
Right.
So now you have all of this variation and each one is unique, and that's what makes the organ so special.
Right. And they are basically families of pipes, too, that produce the same character of sound. Flute pipes, well, you kind of know what they sound like
sure.
a little bit. Although it's a little bit disconcerting maybe to think about a 16-foot-long flute. you have string pipes, the string family, violin and cello pipes. Now, they don't really have vibrating strings, but
sure.
they have more of a sound of a string instrument. You have reed pipes that are produce more of a buzzy sound.
Like oboes or bassoons.
Yeah,
in the
or
orchestra.
Like the brass, the trumpet pipes and the trombone pipes, usually called posauna. Those are actually reed pipes too. They're produced by reeds. But they produce a very strident sound like a trumpet or trombone would use.
So how do you make all of these sounds?
Well, you pull out stops. Or you use special things like they call couplers. You use special couplers that will tie together groups of pipes, for instance.
So when you see an organ console and it looks like a big rocket ship,
yeah.
this is why.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of these things are being controlled by
yeah.
the player.
And you can pull out those stops one at a time. And you also have combination stops where you can press a button or something and a bunch of stops will automatically engage. Now, of course, what's making those pipes sound? Air. And, of course, during the early days of organs, this air was provided by bellows. And somebody had to be pumping those bellows at all times to keep the air going. And there are a number of stories from the Baroque period about schoolboys who were whose job was to pump the bellows in the organ, and they would maybe neglect their duties and end up getting thrashed for it and things like that. But somebody had to pump those bellows, and it's more complicated when more advanced organs come along, and you have high pressure and low pressure pipes. Some, like the reeds, require more pressure than the flutes do.
Sure.
So you've got all sorts of little engineering challenges here too.
Would you ever need more than one person to do the bellows?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
I would imagine.
Sometimes there were several. I don't know what the limit was, but I think I've read about instances with at least three people working bellows at one time.
So we don't have those anymore. What's
no, we have electric motors now that do that, and of course the bigger the organ, the more wind it's going to have to use.
Right.
So that for some of the really, really big organs of the big cathedrals. Those bellows, that's a major issue, is keeping those bellows going.
Right.
And there are all sorts of different ways of figuring out how to do that.
Well, even maintaining the pipes. If a reed breaks in a pipe, and you picture a pipe organ, finding the pipe and getting to it and taking it apart.
Well, that's another thing that most anybody who's spent any time in churches listening to organs knows about a cipher. And the cipher is when the valve that controls a pipe sticks open and the pipe continues to sound.
Ah.
And then in that particular case, somebody has to go crawling around in the organ pipes, find that pipe and pull it out and disconnect it until it can that valve can be fixed. Lots of little fun things like that. But going back to that keyboard, most people are probably familiar with organs that have two keyboards, one on top of another. And these are referred to as being really different organs altogether. The bottom keyboard is called the great organ, for obvious reasons. It is the one that has the most prominent pipes. It's the ones that you hear really first. The manual above that controls what's called a swell organ, and it's called that because the organist has the opportunity to make the sound swell, to have crescendos and diminuendos, and that can be done by this particular pipes in the swell organ are enclosed in shutters.
Okay.
And by pressing that pedal down, it looks like a gas pedal or accelerator pedal with the right foot, that opens or closes the shutter. So you can get a crescendo or a diminuendo in that using that. It's also a different class, different pipes in the swell organ. As the organs get bigger and the keyboards get added on, there are choir organs called that are maybe the chest of pipes is located near where the choir sings. There are recit organs. I don't know all the different kinds, but anybody who's seen pictures of really big organs know that there might even be six keyboards on an organ. And each one of these will control a different group of pipes, or through the wonders of modern technology and coupling, any pipes on the great organ, for instance, the lower keyboard can actually be patched into one of the upper keyboards to make it a little easier to play. So it's a very complicated instrument. It is easily the largest musical instrument in the world. And we're talking about almost any pipe organ is the largest musical instrument in the world. It is built in. It contains a minimum of, 83 pipes, I think, is an absolute minimum, with one rank, but often has thousands of pipes of different types. The Wanamaker organ in Philadelphia that the piece the Jochen Symphony Concertant was written for, I seem to remember it's like 67,000 pipes or something like that. It's huge. But there are thousands of pipes. And, of course, all those pipes have to be tuned individually.
Right.
And they do go out of tune after a while, and they have to be painstakingly brought back into tune. So organ maintenance can be quite a... it's not like tuning a piano where 3 hours and $150 later, you've got the job done.
No, I helped tune a little Portative organ one time for a concert that I was working.
Yeah.
They couldn't get there. And you had to stick your hand in there and adjust the length of the pipe where the air thing was. And the organist's hands weren't small enough.
Right.
And he was trying to tune it before the concert. And he called me over to stick my hand in. I asked him if that meant I could call myself an organ tuner. And he said, no, quit my day job.
No.
It was fascinating. So what about this concert? We're not using the Coronado organ.
We're not using that. And that's a question in itself. Well, why aren't we using the Grand Barton organ? The Grand Barton organ was not designed for this kind of music.
The pipes that are there cannot produce the sound that's needed for these.
This is a theater. Theater organs are specific, kind of a subgenre of organs. They were built for a particular purpose, and that was to accompany silent movies. And they replaced an orchestra to accompany silent movies. And of course, they're therefore will have a lot of sounds that are maybe a little closer to what you'll hear in an orchestra, as well as a whole host of percussion instruments.
Ah.
They have xylophones, they have cymbals, they
keep
have
it very
bells.
Colorful.
Sure. Yes, all sorts of different things. So this just doesn't have the same set of sounds that this particular piece needs. Now, this piece, what we're talking about? We're talking about a piece by Josef Jonchen, a Belgian composer, wrote a lot of pieces for organ. And in particular, this piece, his Symphonie Concertante, is considered to be, by most people, the best work ever written for organ and orchestra.
So this was his big deal.
Yeah.
This is his
now,
piece.
Now, what does that mean? What does a work for organ and orchestra mean? Are we talking about a concerto? We have violin concertos. We have piano concertos, in which case, you know, a soloist comes and plays the piano and plays the violin, whatever. This isn't quite the same thing. First of all, there's the acknowledgement that this piece doesn't get done. It's not going to get done everywhere because you've got to have an organ. And you've got to have a big organ to be able to do this piece. A really big organ. It was written for the largest organ in the world. wasn't premiered by that organ through a number of circumstances, but was finally performed with that organ. The Wanamaker organ in the Wanamaker's, now it's Macy's in Philadelphia. So it's quite a large instrument. And it's not called a concerto. That's one of the interesting things about this. And it's not really, in some respects, a Symphonie Concertante. Concertante is a word, or concertante, if you're talking Italian, is a word that composers have used to describe a piece that uses some solo, usually more than one solo instrument, but in a less important role than in a concerto. Concertos have specific forms that people expect. You're going to have that first movement double exposition form, and you know, the last movement rondo, and the slow movement in the middle, three movement form. Symphonie Concertante doesn't have any of those restrictions. But in this particular piece, the organ, I think it can be argued, is much more important than a solo instrument in a standard concerto. First of all, it plays a lot more. In the final movement of the Symphonie Concertante Toccata, the organ never stops. There is not one measure of rest for the organist. And even in the other movements, there are very few measures of rest. The organ is playing almost constantly, and that's because the organ here is not so much seen as a soloist, it's considered to be a separate orchestra. There are two equal entities here, a large romantic orchestra and a large romantic organ.
So what organ will we see at the concert?
We'll see one of the toasters I mentioned before.
But an upgraded modern version.
The toasters have come a long way. Digital sound has come a long distance in making these instruments much more acceptable. This is a particular one. It's an Allen organ. There are two big manufacturers of electronic organs now, Rogers and Allen.
We just need that to get the sound.
Right.
Because we don't have the pipes in the Coronado.
We don't have pipes. The sounds that these organs use are actually digitally reproduced from real pipe organs. The sound of the individual ranks of the organs are recorded digitally, and programmed into the organ so that when you choose that particular stop and play that stop on the organ, it sounds, in theory anyway, to the best ability of a loudspeaker to reproduce the sound, it sounds exactly like it does in the pipe organ.
Which makes organ music so much more accessible because you don't have to have all those pipes in large spaces anymore to do this great literature.
Right. You just have to have a lot of money to pay for these organs because they're very expensive. not as expensive as pipe organs. A symphonic pipe organ, that you put in a symphony hall, costs upwards of $1 million.
Wow. I can see why, with all the pipes and the craftsmanship.
The craftsmanship, each pipe is individually made, and of course all the electronics and everything
is the time.
It takes a long time to build.
Make and then install.
Right. So these the Allen electronic organ that we're using is a 3-manual. I couldn't even begin to tell you all of its specifications. But these organs are actually, they're designed to be able to reproduce acoustics of significant churches, big churches and concert halls.
Wow.
So I remember seeing Hector Oliveira, our soloist, demonstrate his own particular organ. He has a Rogers, huge Rogers organ in his home. And he presses a button, and it sounds like he's playing in Notre Dame Cathedral.
Wow.
In Paris. You've got this 7-second echo, the reverberation after that. We won't be using that particular feature because it would sound strange. The orchestra
sure.
doesn't have that reverberation. But you put all these with the wonderful digital sounds together and all of the ways of linking them that electronics make possible. And all this, then the sound goes out through cables to 20 or 21 individual loudspeakers that each weigh 100 pounds.
This is going to be quite a production.
Yeah. So we have a couple tons of equipment there on the stage that just belongs to the organ. They're quite large cabinets. We haven't quite figured out where they're all going to go yet, but stack them up or whatever.
So we won't see every individual speaker. We'll see large cabinets that are holding.
You'll see a lot of them, certainly, but we'll try to keep some of them out of the way. But you put all these speakers together and you get a quite impressive
organ
sound. Yeah. So now we're in an age where we can maybe hear some more of these pieces that are written for organ and orchestra. There's nothing quite like this particular piece, though. It's extremely demanding on the soloist. The best, the top organ virtuosos always flock to this piece as a demonstration of their ability. Virgil Fox, one of the most famous organists of the 20th century, this is kind of a calling card of his. And you can hear many different performances on YouTube of this piece being played.
And there's one other piece on the program that we'll hear the organ on.
Right, and it's a piece that's much more famous to people who are familiar with organs, and that's the Saint-Saëns' Third Symphony, which is called the Organ Symphony. Ironically, the organ plays only a tiny fraction of the time that the organ plays in the Jochen piece. Tiny fraction. As a matter of fact, it doesn't even play in the first and third movements. There are four movements in the symphony. It only plays during the second and the fourth. But anybody who lived during the era of home stereo system, the heyday of home stereos, knows about the Organ Symphony because that fourth movement was always the test of how good your stereo system was, how good your speakers were. You'd put on that fourth movement, and when the organ comes roaring in with that C major chord at the beginning of the fourth movement, everybody would go, "Oh yes, that's great speakers you've got here." The floor would shake, and the that's the effect that you want. That's the effect that you want with an organ of this size. You actually want to feel the room vibrate. And you can get that effect with those real big bass pipes. Sometimes you're not even aware of hearing the sound. It's so low. Mm. You just feel the vibration. So Saint-Saëns, this is his last symphony, and he wrote this organ as kind of a, it's not a concerto, and it's not really featured. The organ part is not terribly difficult, There's nothing flashy about it. It just adds sonority. The second movement, which is a slow movement, is a very beautiful, very tranquil movement with some underpinned by this wonderful velvety organ sound. Whereas the last movement, the finale, uses the full organ, uses that the full French organ with all of the brilliance and all of the reed pipes and all of the great rumbling bass. It's for a large orchestra, and the whole point of the last movement is to make a lot of noise.
So it sounds like whether you consider yourself to be an organ lover or not, this is a concert you should not miss. It's going to be exciting and a lot to see. I'm looking forward to it, and I hope that many people will join us.
And I do too.
Thank you.